Hey everybody, thanks for listening to iOS Dev Discussions. It's another episode of Origin Stories, the show where I bring on developers from the community, talk about how they got started in code, how they got their first job, all that good stuff. And this episode was a fun one. We got to have Mayuko Inoue on the show, iOS developer and fellow YouTuber. Many of you out there may know her from her YouTube channel, youtube.com/hellomayuko. We got to talk about how she first discovered code back in middle school using Neopets and editing HTML, how she went through college getting her CS degree, how she got her first internships, which led to her first job, and then eventually a job at Patreon. And then also, one of my favorite things whenever I get to interview another YouTuber is hearing the origin stories of YouTube and just how content creation has affected their career, all that good stuff. And we got a little bonus at the end because, as many of you out there may know, I have started streaming on Twitch, hanging out with the community. She has done so as well, so we got to talk about the Twitch channels, and stick around for that. We talk about how much fun we're having interacting with our community, and I think a lot of you are missing out on some good times. So anyway, enough rambling from me. Let's get on with the show. All right, Mayuko, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So for those that may not know you, I know we probably share a bit of an audience, but for those that don't know you, give a real quick introduction, and then as always, we'll dive into the story a little deeper.
Sure, sounds good. So my name's Mayuko. I am an iOS developer. I've been doing iOS for about 5 years, and I also am a tech content creator, so I have a YouTube channel where I talk about what it's like to live in Silicon Valley as a software engineer, as well as presences on all the social things that everybody has nowadays.
Yeah, I always like to, I always like these episodes where we get bonus origin stories. So we'll save all the YouTube stuff, for after the career origin story, because a lot of my audience, I don't know if you get this, like a lot of my audience has, you know, talked to me and seen what I've done, and it has inspired them to start like creating their own content, whether that's podcasts, blogs, videos, etc. Have you run into that as well?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like the number of, so my very first video was a day in the life of a software engineer. And I would say at least once a month, I get a link in some DM somewhere that tells me that they made their own version, which makes me really happy. But yeah, that I get that all the time, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think everybody on the internet has made that video, but
no kidding.
anyway, yeah. Well, again, we'll talk about that YouTube stuff. Hopefully, people will find that interesting that are maybe, you know, teetering on the fence whether they should create content or not. But we'll get into all that. Let's get into your origin story on how you became a software developer. Do you remember like the very first time you coded or got interested in code? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I think maybe the very first time that I coded was probably in middle school. I think it was middle school. It was when Neopets was really big.
Real quick, was that like your school had a class that taught you, or was this your own like curiosity?
Definitely my own curiosity. It was like the Facebook of that time, where you just hang out with everybody and your Neopets. And yeah, it was interesting because it was like one of those like you customize your pages with some HTML and CSS that you copy pasted from somewhere, but you just really wanted a very specific color or something. So you go into the code. And so I feel like pre-college, my exposure to code was through Neopets, Zanga, and Tumblr, which all were kind of the same. Like if you just want to change the layout or add like a random marquee at the top of your screen, you have to dive into the code to do that. And I think that's probably the first time or first couple of times that I dove into the code.
So that was just because you wanted to make your page look cool, right? Did you like catch the coding bug, or was it just a means to an end? Like, oh, I got to type this code to get this color and who cares about it? Or did you actually kind of start to get interested in it?
No, not at all. It was definitely a means to an end. I was like, yeah. I don't know what this other stuff is, but I'm going to command search and look for title or something like that. And I didn't really look into anything else. Like I was definitely going through all of the I remember there was like a theme store and you literally just copy paste code. And I did that as much as I could. So I definitely did not catch the coding bug in the early days at all.
So then what made you, you said this was mostly through middle school, maybe high school. So I guess, maybe I'll skip ahead a little bit. I know you went to school for computer science. So what made you decide to choose that major then if this was just a means to an end? Kind of bridge that gap for us.
Yeah, it was actually really serendipitous because when I went to college, so I went to UC San Diego. And when I entered, I was like undeclared, had no idea what I was going to do with my future at all. But I knew that I wanted to go into STEM. And I had tried out like chemistry, I tried out neuroscience, I tried out math, and I was like, I hate all of this. And then I happened to take this class in the philosophy department that was intro to logic. And so basically it was just writing a bunch of proofs, which most people probably wouldn't find very interesting, but I was like, this is the most logical thing that I've done all quarter. And I really enjoyed it and I did well in that class. And so I was talking to like my floor mate because I was living in the dorms at the time. And then I was like, oh, I don't know what to do with my future, but I really like this philosophy class. Maybe I should be a philosophy major. And they're like, nah, girl, like you got to be a computer science major. My friend was a computer engineering major, so a very similar major. And they told me like basically like all of coding is just logic statements, which I had written code before, but it never really clicked in my mind in that way. So I took like intro to computer science before declaring my major. And then like about halfway through, I was like, you know, this makes sense to me. And it's not as hard as biology. So that's kind of how I got into coding. And then, yeah, I did 4 years at university for computer science.
So do you, and I always like to ask this question because I don't have a computer science degree, mm-hmm. But I know many of the audience out there may not, many of them do, but how much do you feel like that has helped you? I mean, we all know that it's not required, you don't have to have it, but mm-hmm. do you feel like you're using that core knowledge, maybe not on a day-to-day basis, but quite often? Like, how do you use that?
You know, I don't know. I always err on the side of like, no, I don't. My program at my school for computer science was very, how do I say, like the coursework was very diverse. Like the computer science program was right next to like the electrical engineering program, basically, in terms of course curriculum. And so I did everything from like operating systems to like the hardest class was like a compiler's class where you write your own compiler. We did this like, we wrote, what is it, assembly in like multiple classes. As well as like I did a mobile programming class. So we did a bunch of different stuff. There was also a gaming class that was offered that I didn't take. And like in my day to day as an iOS developer, I maybe only use like 1.5 of the classes that I took in college in like as part of my, I guess, training to be an iOS developer.
Yeah.
But I mean, I did learn a lot of kind of what, like, I think I probably discount my degree more than I maybe should, because I did take like a how to debug class, which that's definitely a skill to have, which was really useful to have in this kind of class setting. But yeah, I don't use a whole lot of it. Like a lot of it I've honestly forgotten.
I mean, that's what everybody says. Yeah. Like, especially when they come to study for interviews, they got to relearn everything all over again.
Oh yeah. Cracking the coding interview is just like all I really need.
There you go. Yeah. Link in the description. There you go.
Yeah.
Link too.
Yeah.
We're YouTubers. We're pros at saying all that stuff.
We are. Yeah.
But, yeah. So where does mobile come into play? I heard you say that you took a mobile class, but again, was mobile always the goal, or you sounded like you really didn't know when you started and you just kind of like found your way? So how does mobile come into play? And then the second part of that question is why iOS, or how that comes into play?
Yeah, so kind of similar to how I had no idea what I was going to do with my future at the beginning of college, I also didn't really know where I wanted to go with software development. At my school, there were kind of like these concentrations that you could take. So there was one about like security, another one about software development, another one about AI. And the one about software engineering was just like, this feels more like what I want to do. I took internships all throughout college, and a lot of them focused on just building products and features for people that they were going to use. So I definitely knew that I wanted to go into like a product development thing for as a software developer. But in terms of mobile, my first mobile programming class was actually an Android class. And it was just like, it wasn't even necessarily a mobile class. It was just like, you just have to make something in 10 weeks. And it ended up being like this CrossFit app, because our professor was really into CrossFit at the time and he wanted to make all his students make an app for him.
Everybody made the same app, or you all had to make like your own different version of a CrossFit app?
Everyone made their own different version of a CrossFit app, which was really like other semesters they did like a wine app. Like literally this professor was just like, what do I want people to make an app for? And like, I remember the second class he called in a CrossFit instructor and had everybody do CrossFit as a way to gain user empathy.
Really?
Yeah. It was an interesting time. So yeah. Android app was the first thing that I made. And then a couple years later, I was just like, I just need credit, so I'm going to take a mobile programming class, and it was an iOS class. And that was where I did my very first iOS development there. And the way that I landed into just mobile generally, because even after taking those classes, I was still kind of like, I don't really know if mobile is where I want to go, or maybe it's web. My first job out of college was at a company called Intuit, and they had a like rotational program. So basically, for anyone who had just graduated college and didn't really know what kind of job that they wanted to do, there was like this 2-year four rotation program where you can just hop between different teams and roles and projects as a way to kind of discover what you want to do. And my first rotation just ended up being on an iOS team. And then that's when it all came together, and I was like, I really, really like this. Prior to that, I had done like a web internship before, but web just like, and it still to this day feels like the Wild West where there's no rules. And that made me feel kind of uncomfortable. But iOS specifically, I was like, okay, well, I did learn a little bit about compilers, and I know a little bit about hardware through just coursework, but also like I really have always been a Mac and Apple fangirl. It's honestly like passed down from my dad. Like my dad has had Mac since like the early 90s. So in a way, it kind of felt like it was meant to be, sort of, and I've just been doing iOS since then.
I was the same way. It was when I decided I wanted to do mobile, Android wasn't even a thought in my mind.
Yeah.
it wasn't even a consideration. So building on that, for those out there that maybe they are students in school, not sure what path they want to take within software engineering, or even people out there learning to code on their own who are like, oh, I'm learning JavaScript one day, Swift one day, Android, iOS, they don't know. So now that you've gone through that path out the other side, like what is your advice for people that are trying to find which path they want to take? Like I said, you kind of fell into yours by trying a lot, but maybe people might not have access to those internships. Do you have any advice for those out there?
Totally. Yeah. I think honestly, like try a bunch of stuff, and not just try in terms of like, don't just do introductory tutorials in every technology. I think building something meaningful in each technology stack and then trying another thing gives you a lot more insight into what you like and what you don't like. So like I bought like a book once on iPhone development a long time ago, and I maybe read like 50 pages and I was like, yeah, that's cool. But then it wasn't until I took like a 10-week course where I actually built an app from start to finish that I feel like I actually faced what it meant to do iOS development for the first time, that helped me to decide that that's what I wanted to do.
Real quick, do you remember what book that was?
It was like iPhone development for iOS 4 or 5 or something like that. I bought it at Barnes & Noble, and it was black and yellow, and Xcode looked very different from how it does
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I have it somewhere still.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, after school, you mentioned you got your first job at Intuit. We always like to talk about how people got their first ever iOS job. So was that through an internship? Like how did that come to be? And then we'll talk about the interview process once we find out, you know, how you got that job.
Yeah. So I got that job through an internship that I did at Intuit the summer before I graduated. And that internship I got through a friend who like was part of the student org that I was in, but he graduated before me. So he kind of like took my resume and put it at the top of the stack because he was part of the university recruiting team. And so I got my internship through him, and then I got my full-time job through the internship because they were like, oh, you did a good job. Like, we want to keep you on and have you be in the rotational program. So it was kind of like because I had this one friend who I could rely on, I got my job.
Well, it's funny. Now we can maybe segue into my favorite topic, and that is like the power of your network. Like you heard it right there. It's like you just had one friend. You don't have to have this crazy huge network, right? Just knowing one person can really, really benefit. So can you speak to the power of the network? Not only we just heard how it helped at Intuit, but how has it helped like, you know, throughout your career?
Yeah, totally. I think that like having that one friend who got me my first job was really big. I also remember like my very first internship even, like I was just working for this like group on campus, and then I was like a secretary, and then I was like, hey, I'm looking for an internship. And they're like, cool, we already know who you are. We feel comfortable working with you. So like, let's give you this internship. So I feel like networking is just based on the fact that like people want to hire people they know will do a good job. Whether that was like a friend that you had where you did programming stuff together, or maybe it's just someone you know who happens to work at a company. Just I feel like it's a lot easier to hire someone you know than someone you don't know. So if you just say like, hey, I'm looking for a thing, then they'll likely kind of connect you up in that way. But yeah, I mean, ever since I graduated too, it's been interesting navigating networking in tech, because I feel like nowadays it's more about like exchanging ideas and talking through different ways of solving problems, as well as still job hunting in a lot of ways, because a lot of software engineers hop jobs all the time. But yeah, I feel like networking, if anything, has been my biggest my biggest tool in being a software engineer and navigating my career.
Longtime listeners of the show will know that I preach that every time. That's why I said my favorite thing to talk about, because it's just so powerful.
And
we'll probably touch on this later on in the show when we talk about like the YouTube channel and creating content and putting your name out there, how that just expands your network as well. But don't go too far down that path, because we'll get down there. But, you know, you've been doing this for 5 years now. What would you say is like your main tool for networking now?
My main tool for networking.
Or maybe not tool, but like how do you do it? Is it meetups? Is it Twitter? Is it like what is it?
Yeah, well, I think early on it was definitely meetups. Well, actually, so I think there's two things. One is Twitter, actually. Like no lie, I feel like a lot of the iOS development community is on Twitter. And so I have a lot of like Twitter friends who become real life friends. I feel like I actually met you on Twitter maybe.
I think it's probably through YouTube initially is how we probably discovered each other, and then, you know, interacting. That's how it always starts, right? It always, I'll follow you, you follow me, cool. And then like a comment here or there, and then a comment's a little more, and then, oh, you're going to be at this conference? Cool. Now you meet up. That's a good point to illustrate, because I feel like we were probably following each other for, I don't know, maybe like a year or so. We just met at DubDub, a month ago for the first time. But the reason I want to talk about that is because that illustrates the point that networking is like almost like a long-term investment. You don't just like follow somebody, spam their DMs right away, bam, 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 bam. It's like a long build to like really truly build these long-lasting relationships.
It really is. And a lot of the time when I'm like following someone or commenting on someone's Twitter post or whatever, like I don't know what that relationship's going to give or like what's going to come out of that. It's just like you just kind of start talking to people without really knowing what's going to happen. And then sometimes it turns into an awesome thing. And that's when it's really awesome, because you're just like, oh, I'm so glad that I pinged you that one time or something.
Yeah, and when you look back, it feels so random, you know, like I just randomly commented on that and like, look what it turned into. So, and it's a good thing to illustrate, because people are probably sick of me talking about Twitter by now, but I'm going to keep talking about it.
Because it's
great. Well, because I regret like the first 2 years of my career, I didn't interact on Twitter. And I feel like I just would have been so far ahead had I done that. And I think many people listening might be scared, like, oh, what do I have to contribute to the conversation? I don't know. And I don't know. I hope this is a good story to like, just get out there, interact in the conversations, just, you know, be part of the community.
Just say whatever. Like sometimes I don't know what to say, so I just send GIFs. And I'm like, right. I don't have words, but I have SpongeBob GIFs for you, and I hope you like them.
There you go. Yeah. So one thing we kind of skipped over that I want to make sure we don't skip over, if it is a thing. Mm-hmm. I always like to talk about people's first iOS apps that they built. I know you went like right out of college into a job. So did you ever build like your own app that's on the App Store, or did you just go right into, you know, the industry?
I basically went right into the industry. Yeah. That one mobile programming class I did was basically my first ever iOS app. And that one was like, I don't know if you had this in college, but maybe some of the listeners did. Like, there used to be this device called an iClicker. It might still be around, but it's basically...
I think so. Is that where they put up like a multiple choice question on the screen and you had to like click A, B, C, D?
Yeah, and you have to buy this like $40 remote control basically from
ridiculous.
The bookstore. Yeah, it was so expensive. And so me and like my teammates were all like, why the heck is this remote control so expensive? Everybody has a smartphone now, so we should make an app. So that's what we made. And at the time, iBeacons were like up and coming, and so we used iBeacon technology. But it was basically like a polling app, which I actually still think it was a really good idea. We ended up not putting in the App Store because there was a lot of like infrastructure that we would have needed to basically roll it out. But I still, I think I have that app installed somewhere on like an iPhone 4, actually.
You still have an iPhone 4?
Yeah, somewhere. It's probably dead.
It's like a brick.
I know. It doesn't die.
No, yeah. I'm just glad we don't have to support that screen size anymore.
Seriously.
But anyway, so let's talk about, so it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the first kind of job at Intuit, you kind of knew, did you really have to interview for it? Or was it kind of just, hey, we know you, come on in. Was it kind of like a half-ass interview?
It kind of was a half-ass interview. Like my internship one felt like a real-ish interview, but it also wasn't super coding heavy. And I knew that about Intuit at the time. I don't know if they've changed their interview practices now, but interview that I had to convert the internship to a full-time job, they were basically like, do you want this? Are you going to work hard? Yeah? Okay, cool.
Cool. High five. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. You're in.
Did you work with Christina Fox?
I did not, actually. I knew of her, though, because she was part of a bunch of early career stuff, and I watched her in panels. So she was kind of like my role model for a long time until I met her, and I was like, we're friends now. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, she hosted the Fiesta Kid at DubDub, where you and I hung out for a little bit there, too.
Yep.
So that was kind of like the half-ass interview. Was after Intuit, I'll jump ahead. I know you went to Patreon. Mm-hmm. Was that like a real job search or was that also through your network?
It was a real job search. Like I knew no one at Patreon.
Okay, cool. This is the good stuff. This is what people out there that may not have the network, like I don't have those connections. What do I do? So this is kind of a good story. So how does Patreon come about? And were they one of 60 companies you applied for? Like, I guess let's talk about how you started searching for companies, mm-hmm. how you narrowed it down, and then how we ended up at Patreon.
Yeah, sounds good. So my first job at Intuit, I stayed there for a year. It was the rotational program. So I did a one-year rotation, and then I did a six-month rotation on another team. And then at the end of that, I was kind of like, okay, I kind of want to work on something other than financial apps, because I worked on TurboTax and QuickBooks at Intuit. And then I kind of just wanted to go into the startup scene a little bit. And I didn't really know that many people who were working at startups. So I opened AngelList and I was like, startups with iOS developers needed in San Francisco. And the top result was Patreon. And I had heard of Patreon before because I follow YouTubers and podcasters. And it really made me super excited because I was like, this is so dope. Like if I could work on stuff that my favorite YouTubers use, that would be really awesome. So yeah, again, I didn't know anybody at Patreon and I kind of just cold applied. And I applied to maybe like 4 or 5 companies during that time because I was just looking for a job, a startup to work at after Intuit. And actually, Patreon didn't get back to me for like 2 to 3 months. I had already interviewed with some other companies and had accepted one actually from somewhere else.
So wait a minute, real quick. On the cold like application, mm-hmm. they didn't get back to you for 2 to 3 months?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Wow. I was like, oh, I guess they don't want me. This is that cold shoulder treatment that I'm getting. Right. And then I think as a last-ditch effort, I was like, I emailed them. And I was like, excuse me, did you get my application? Like, I'm really interested in this. And then they were like, oh, yeah, we got your application. Sorry, we've just been like super busy and we haven't gotten around to it. But yeah, that whole kind of time was actually, I think of it as like the first time that I actually interviewed for a job. And so I opened Cracking the Coding Interview and I like studied algorithms, data structures, as well as like iOS specific stuff. Like this was my first interview round that I did, which was like, I want a very specific software developer job. So I like went through like UIKit. I like read a bunch of Apple developer documentation, went through some Ray Wenderlich tutorials. Like I knew that they were going to ask me how well I knew my iOS stuff. So I did a fair amount of studying for all of that. And I'm not really sure if it paid off or not, because I didn't necessarily feel like anybody asked super difficult questions that I didn't study for. But I had done some basic like UI stuff. I'd done some basic data stuff, kind of all the really foundational stuff that people would ask to make sure you've done iOS development before.
That's what I always feel like in those interviews. You know, you'll spend weeks and weeks and weeks studying, you know, all those practice problems are cracking the coding interview, and they ask you like one specific question, you know, and it feels like 99% of what you did was a waste.
Totally.
It's so hard to study for because it's like you're studying in this ocean and it's such like one cup of water of knowledge that they're going to ask you about, but you got to study the whole ocean.
Oh,
that's crazy.
That's exactly what it felt like. I was like, oh my God, they're going to ask me everything about GCD and they're going to ask me everything about UI kit and core data, which I've never even used before.
No, don't get me started on that. My audience knows, like, they ask for core data videos all the time, and I just thought, I was like, no, I don't, nobody uses
it.
Get me wrong. And every time I say that, sure enough, somebody always, you know, pipes up, I use it, you know, but it's like the vast majority, I've worked on 10 apps, you know, 3 or 4 different startups, and anybody I talk to, like, it's so rarely used. I know Apple uses it in their first party stuff, but it's not. The ratio of people that ask about it and think they have to know it to the amount that it actually gets used is like ridiculously out of whack. So that's my public service announcement. You don't have to know core data. It's rarely used.
Yeah. Just know like the basics of it. And even still, I don't know. I feel like core data is a pretty tricky API given that is really different from like any other database out there. And it almost feels evil to ask that as an interview question to anybody.
Yeah. So it sounds like you prepared mostly iOS. Did they give the typical data structures and algorithms whiteboarding problems, or did they focus mostly on iOS?
For the Patreon interview, I think they didn't really ask me any specific iOS stuff, but we did some like pair programming problems, and those were all in Xcode projects. So it did help to like have those things at the ready to use in pair programming with somebody. But they also asked me kind of just these algorithmic questions that I don't know. I guess I studied for, but you can never know what they're going to ask you. So you just have to think on your feet a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now Patreon, I'm assuming, because I always do this when I watch videos, maybe you do too. I think every developer does. I remember watching your Day in the Life video and like whatever, sometime you must have showed some code on the screen or whatever. And I noticed it was Objective-C.
Yeah.
Because I always like to know like what apps are written in what. So I remember like seeing that. I was like, oh, okay, Patreon's in Objective-C. So have you really written a lot of Swift? Because I know you just recently left Patreon, but what's your Swift experience like?
Yeah, I feel like my experience has been like 6 months of Objective-C and then 6 months of Swift, because I always land on teams that start off in Objective-C and then maybe start migrating to Swift. So at Patreon, when I joined, it was basically 99% all Objective-C. And then I was the only iOS developer for a little bit. And then our team grew. We had a little bit more people and time to actually invest in Swift adoption. And then that's when we started writing Swift. And so I think for the last probably 4 to 5 months of my time at Patreon, we were writing all Swift because it was like all the new stuff in Swift. We factored some existing stuff, and I kind of was in this nice Swift walled garden. and then previous to that too, at Intuit, I was like 1 year of Objective-C. And then I went to a team where they were like, we want you to build this brand new feature all in Swift. So it always goes back and forth for me.
Yeah. How do you feel when you have to go back to Objective-C?
Oh, God, it sucks. I'm like, why is this so verbose? Like, nothing is nice and pretty and clean, and you have to make 2 files to make 1 class.
I know.
It's all these small little things. But sometimes there are things where I'm like, oh, my God, enums are so much harder in Objective-C, and why don't they just work? So, yeah, it's mild annoyances.
I've been very lucky. I learned Objective-C. So I did the boot camp in like summer of 2015. Mm-hmm. And so they were still teaching Objective-C. So I learned on Objective-C. But my first job out of the boot camp was Swift. And I've been pretty much 100% Swift ever since. So I've been dodging that Objective-C bullet. But I've like specifically looked for opportunities that were Swift, right? You know, I shouldn't say I've turned down companies, but like I've not even considered companies because I got there in Objective-C. Not because like, and when I say this, a lot of people, I always get the, oh, if you're a real programmer, you don't care about the language. You can program whatever you want. Right. And I'm just like, I don't want to program in that language.
Yeah.
Like, I want to enjoy my day every day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I would enjoy my day if I had to write Objective-C every day. So that's kind of like my comeback to it. So I've specifically, you know, sought out Swift opportunities.
Yeah, literally when I'm in Objective-C, I'm always just daydreaming about Swift. It's like,
exactly.
The grass is always greener, and it's actually greener on the other side. And here I am on the less green grass because...
Right. So so Patreon is a good segue into, let's talk about the YouTube origin story in a little bit.
Ooh,
but first, you patreon.com/SeanAllen if you want to check that out. And also patreon.com/ what's yours?
Mayuko.
Mayuko. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, is your YouTube channel, we didn't even give that out. Is it just / Mayuko or is it Hello Mayuko?
YouTube is youtube.com/ Hello Mayuko.
That's what I thought. And that's why I meant to ask about that as we start, you know, the good segue into the origin story. Why Hello Mayuko? It's just / Mayuko was taken?
No.
It seems like an original name.
Yeah, actually, like, Mayuko is actually sort of common name in Japanese, but Hello okay. Mayuko came from when I was in high school and I was choosing my Tumblr URL. For some reason, I was like, what rhymes with Mayuko? Hello? Which it doesn't really.
Not really. You can force it to rhyme, I guess.
Yeah, but I was like, oh, it's both ends in O. And that's and then I was just like, oh, hello, Mayuko. Like how people greet me. Sure, I thought I was being really clever. But that kind of stuck because it started with Tumblr. And then I think I chose that for my Twitter account when I made a Twitter account years ago. And it's just kind of, I'm like, oh, well, now this is a thing and I have to stick to it.
Right. Yeah. Isn't it funny how like high school usernames and email accounts like just stick with you your whole life?
I know. I'm actually glad that I chose something like tame like this.
Yeah. Yours is fine. Like there's many people that have chosen poorly.
Yes. Yes.
So let's talk about the YouTube channel and like why you even wanted to start a YouTube channel. Like, were you always, you know, wanted to be in front of a camera or like how does this even start?
Yeah. So I was in high school when all the cool internet stuff came out, like Tumblr, but also like YouTube came out when I was in high school. And I had kind of always wanted to create a YouTube channel, but didn't really know what to make. And it was always that imposter syndrome and perfectionist of like, if I make a YouTube channel, it has to be super good. So that was kind of what was going in my mind for 10 years basically. And then I was working at Patreon and I felt like I was at a point in my career where I was like, I want to do more than my day job of being a software engineer. I've always been really passionate about diversifying the tech industry and welcoming people in. Like, I feel like everybody who wants to be here deserves to be here. And I thought for a long time that I would give that message out via conference talks and podcasts and stuff. But I happened to go to VidCon in summer of 2017 with Patreon. And VidCon is this huge YouTuber conference. I think there's like thousands of people there. And I went just to gain some creator empathy to do a better job at work. But I actually learned like basically how to make a YouTube channel because I was going to all these panels. And it just kind of clicked for me there where I was like, I'm going to talk about tech on YouTube, which felt very like true to me in that I've always really liked YouTube. And there's just people that I really admire and look up to on YouTube. But also I thought it would be kind of this new fresh way to talk about the tech industry. So it was at that conference that I came up with the idea of a day in the life of a software engineer. And so it took me like 3 days to film my first video. And it was like the most terrifying thing because I don't have any sort of filming experience, editing experience whatsoever. But I threw it together and then I made my first post in July, about a month later from VidCon.
Yeah, I started mine in March, so you started a little bit after me.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit bitter. Here's my bitterness, everybody. Here's me coming out. What did your first ever YouTube video, how many views does it have? Your first ever video.
Oh, yeah, right.
let's talk about this. I'm bitter.
Right now, I think it has like 4 million views or something ridiculous like that.
Your first ever video, come on. You were like, oh, this YouTube stuff's easy.
Yeah, it was so wild though, because I posted it on, like after I made the video, it was like, obviously, like my very first video on my brand new channel, no one's gonna watch it. So I posted it on Facebook where it was like, hey, Facebook friends, like you're my real IRL friends, please watch this. And I remember watching the video count go to like 100, and I was like, yes, 100 of my friends watched it.
right. 100 views.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I first started my channel, like triple digit views was a big deal.
It was. When it gets to a point where it's like more people are watching this than like people that I actually know in real life is when it gets whoa, like strangers are watching this. They know that I exist.
Hold on one second. I'm trying to slyly pull receipts here. Hold on. So you said you're at VidCon in what, June or July, when you came up with the idea for the day in the life video. I just went back to the Sean Allen vlog on May 12th of 2017 before VidCon for my day in the life video.
Oh.
iOS contractor day in the life. So I don't know if you came up with the idea. Well, here's the thing. My video has 10,000 views. Watch out.
Getting there.
Not the 4 million that somebody else has. No, but I'm just giving you shit. But like, it's just, man, that's awesome. Like your first ever video just blows up. That's crazy. And like, I am bitter, but not really bitter.
I mean, I'm almost bitter too. Cause I'm just like, I don't, like, this is my first video. People hold that video to such a high standard. And in the comments, people were like, oh, like she doesn't even code. Or like, oh, you should have done the video this way. And I'm like, y'all, this is my first ever right. YouTube video. Like, I don't know what the hell I was doing. Like,
right. Like you almost don't want your first ever video to blow up. Like, give me some practice. Let me figure this out. Then you can blow up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as it stands, I'm like still kind of a one hit wonder because no other video that I've made has reached that. So I feel like I'm living in that video's shadow.
Yeah. Those day in the life videos, like just everyone, like I'm thinking about making another one because they all just go nuts and blow up.
They do. It's ridiculous. Yeah. The algorithm loves them.
I know. Well, yeah. Everybody loves them. And then people like, then Jarvis like make a parody of, people are starting to like parody him now too.
Yeah.
I even saw this one guy that like, he's like cracking down on like, these are all fake. Like, this is not how your day goes.
I saw
not
that a, one.
He's like, there's not a puppy break. What is this?
Yeah, I saw that. At first when I saw it, I was just like, who's hating on my day in the life video? And then I watched it. I was like, actually, he's actually kind of right.
Was yours in there?
It was. It was the very last one. And he gave my video credit because it was the only one with code in it. Like right. A friend linked it to me and they're like, someone's shitting on your video. And then I was like, wait, hold on. And then they were like, talking about how, you know, a lot of us left out the long hours of coding from it because it doesn't make good content. And I'm like, yeah, that's literally what I did. Like, otherwise it would have been mostly me just sitting at a desk for like 2 minutes.
Right, right.
No one's going to watch that.
Yeah, I just skimmed through his video, so I didn't even know he addressed yours. But it's true. I mean, because I have started watching some of those and I'm just like, eh, I don't know about this. But, you know, I didn't have the desire to like shit on people in a video. But mm-hmm. Hey, who knows? So let's kind of talk about YouTube and in the YouTuber life here. How many subscribers are you at? Because that's what everybody wants to know.
I am at 230,000 subscribers.
Not too bad for about, hey. What, 2 years of a channel?
Yeah, roughly. 2 years.
Almost exactly. Mm-hmm. Not too bad. What is kind of your biggest takeaway from YouTube? I know that's a very vague question, but like, what have you found to be like the most rewarding thing? Is it like the people you've met, kind of the network you've built, any knowledge you've gained? Like, I don't know. Is there one thing that sticks out that's like super rewarding that makes you think like, man, I'm glad I did this?
Can I break the rules and say 2 things?
You can say 5 things.
Awesome. I'm going to say 2 things.
All right.
One, which you mentioned, is like all the people that I've met. I think the internet gives you a reach like none other, with like very little effort if you compare it to doing that in like a more physical or real setting. The amount of messages that I get from people about their hopes and dreams and who they are and where they live and what their life has been and how they're trying to get into tech has been super, super rewarding, especially because there's no way that I would have ever talked to or met these people. It's also cool because like I've befriended a lot of these people too. And I feel like I have a lot of internet friends and my world is wider and my horizons have been widened. I don't know. I just feel like I've changed as a person because I've learned a lot more about who's out there and all the variety of ways to live life. And just like all the people who are really enthusiastic about tech. It helps me not take my life for granted and all the things that I have had the privilege of getting and like just having the privilege of being here and working as a software engineer. So it makes me really motivated to like continue doing software engineering and making content. The second thing I think that's...
Well, let me jump in real quick. Oh, yeah. I want to build on that before okay. You go into number two okay. is I agree. I'm sure your reach is larger than mine. So I feel you probably have this too, but without like with YouTube, I feel like I could literally go to almost any city in the world and have like people to hang out with, you know, people to stay with, like that kind of thing. Like, yeah. Do you feel that way too?
Yeah, I do. And honestly, like YouTube has maybe become kind of an extrovert because I'm just like, there's so many different people out there and I want to learn about all of them and I'll be friends with all of them. Yeah, it does feel kind of like I have just a lot more friends everywhere, which is a nice feeling.
Yeah, it's weird, and I'm glad you said the extrovert thing, because I've always been extremely, like, introverted. Like, my friends, when they see my YouTube videos, are like, I don't even know who you are. Like, who is this person right now?
Yeah.
And I always say that it's, you know, when you're sitting in your room or wherever you are talking to a camera, it's easy to be, you know, quote-unquote extrovert or whatever. You know, it's a lot different, like, being the life of a party with, you know, 100 people around you. But it has, I wouldn't say I was in a shell, but it definitely has made it easier to talk to people, if that makes sense. Like going into, you know, a setting, like when, you know, when I go to a conference, I'm sure you felt the same way too. Like you have people coming up to you saying hi. It's normally I would have been like, I don't know what to say, but you know, it's just, I don't know. I found it easier to talk to people now thanks to YouTube.
Yeah, same. And I think like also because I'm talking about me and what I stand for on my content or on my YouTube videos, the people who do come to talk to me are, I feel like, are people that I really identify with. So I remember last year at like DubDub, I met someone who was a scholarship winner, and we just kind of talked about a lot of the same feelings that we had about like coming to a tech conference where we don't know anybody and also about the tech industry. And this person was like from Brazil, and I was like, you and I would not have met in any other circumstance, but here we are, like feeling the same way about the same things. And that's really awesome. It makes me feel really connected to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's awesome. So, all right, go ahead with number two.
Oh, yeah. Number two, I think, is just like the creative fulfillment I get from making YouTube videos. I think like in software development, there's definitely a level of creativity that's required and also appreciated in it. But I feel like making videos and just being an internet creator requires a completely different level of creativity. I feel like I've always been kind of a creative person, but I have always studied STEM. And so finding a different way to express myself and express my creativity is really nice. And like that feeling that you get when you're just like in the groove and you're like, this would be a really cool video. Oh, and I'm going to mash it with this music, and I'm going to color correct it that way. Like it's just, it opens an entirely new world of self-expression. Which I feel like is always really important, and that's been really fun.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I always consider myself pretty much my entire life as not a creative person. Oh. And then when I learned how to program, just again, 2015, so not too long ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I feel like that like was this like creative enlightenment for me. I feel like this creative beast that was always hidden in there like finally like was able to come out through like programming, and that led me to like want to just create and build stuff. And like when I say creativity, I'm not necessarily talking like an artist and I can design well, but like even creating business requires creativity. Totally. And like how you do it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's kind of what I'm talking about with creativity, all the different ideas I have and I want to execute on them. So it's weird. I never considered myself that kind of person. And then I learned to program and like it just unleashed this beast. So I don't know. I wanted to tell that story for anybody out there that might be thinking, well, I'm not very creative. But if you're just learning to program, you never know. It might awaken something in you.
Yeah. I feel like if you're just like making anything, creativity is definitely linked to artistic endeavors most of the time. But yeah, you could, like you said, you can definitely be creative in so many other ways. And I feel like that's where the really good ideas come out from. So yeah, highly encourage all forms of creativity.
Right. So let's talk about some of, because I always encourage the content creation, you know, pick your strength, whether it's podcasting, writing, a video, because I think everybody, when I preach content creation, they think, oh, you should be a YouTube channel. And I'll admit, like, YouTube is not for everybody. But, you know, you can blog, you can podcast, you can do whatever. What are some of the benefits you've seen in your career or even life that we haven't talked about already that you've gotten from content creation?
Yeah, I tell a lot of people that making YouTube videos for me has been kind of a form of therapy, actually. I think I'm like a super introspective person sometimes to a fault where I think a lot about who I am and why I am. And I feel like content creation really forces you to do that because especially when it's like a creative endeavor like this where it's like a side hobby, like no one's making you do or asking you to make or do anything. So literally the motivation just comes out from within you. So I'm always asking myself like, why am I making this video or why am I doing this? And it's really like forced me to think about like what kind of impact do I want to have in the world? What makes me and unique? What are the things that I care about? Who do I like to connect to? Like these are all answers that I feel like I've discovered through YouTube and not other means. And so it's really unlocked like a lot of kind of self-reflection in me. And I see that as a huge benefit among, you know, obviously like networking has gotten a lot easier. I've met a lot more people and, whenever like I get recruiters, we're like, oh, I like your YouTube videos, and you get recognition that way. But yeah, for me, it's just I feel like I've learned a lot more about myself doing it, and that's been super cool.
And you recently just gave a talk at AllComp too. Did that come about through the YouTube channel, or like how does that happen?
There's no real way of knowing. But I did submit like a CFP like everybody else. And I went through the review process and then I got approved. So whether the YouTube channel helped or not, who knows? I guess we'd have to ask John himself. But I think it did help. And I mean, the talk that I did was really specific to content creation, or like the intersection of content creation and software engineering. And so even that talk itself like wouldn't have happened if I hadn't done this to begin with.
Right. Yeah. I think it helped. Because the talk I did in London, I'm very sure it helped having, I think just having like an audience, right? Because these conferences want people to be there and want, you know, attention on their audience. On their conference. So think if you have an existing audience, I'm not saying you're guaranteed, but I think it is definitely a feather in your cap when you're, you know, submitting that paper for sure. And it's interesting, you gave the talk, what was the title of the talk again?
The talk was, the talk was Pay It Forward by Me and You, talking about extending a hand to the next generation of Apple developers.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. I wanted to ask that because when you said it was about content creation, the next talk I want to give is actually about content creation.
Ooh.
About how like five ways, and I haven't figured out how I'm going to word this, but you know, five ways content creation can change your career or change your life, something
Ooh.
Like that. And just talk about kind of some of the stuff we talked about, like how it helps your learning. You're going to learn so much more, at least if you're doing like tutorials,
totally.
Right? Because if you're going to put a tutorial on the internet, you have to, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's, make sure you have everything covered because the internet will correct you.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, and when I have been wrong in my tutorials, because obviously I'm not perfect, I have learned from the comment section, you know, correcting me where it's like, okay, yeah, you're right. I should have done it that way better. So, you know, you learn more. We talked about the network, just the business opportunities and the career opportunities. There's just, I feel like content creation has just unlocked my career like so much, and I kind of wanted to share that again to encourage people, you know, to maybe start creating. So I want to give that talk at some point, but I wanted to ask because it sounded like yours might have been similar with the whole content creation thing.
Yeah, I feel like my talk was like, I did the same talk at TriSwift Tokyo in March, and that was basically the same talk but a little bit different too, because there's so many things to talk about in like what it means to pay it forward by being you and how to extend a hand to the next generation of Apple developers. And essentially I talk a lot about like how you have to figure out who you are and what you want to do and like what are you supposed to do in this world. It's all very kind of existential philosophical stuff, but I use it as a way to just be like, what do you want? Like figure that out, and then that's going to be your answer for what to do.
Did you give that talk in Japanese?
I did, yeah. At TriSwift, I did it in English and Japanese. So it was a bilingual talk, which was really challenging.
Wait, when you say, did you give the talk twice or did you like kind of flip back and forth?
I flipped back and forth, yeah. It was like a paragraph in English, then a paragraph in Japanese. Because like TriSwift is like a bilingual conference. So a lot of people did mm-hmm. their talk either just in English or just in Japanese. And then they submit their script to get it translated because there's these translators who work in the back real time to translate it while you're talking.
Oh, wow.
But this was actually like my first ever conference talk. And then I was like, I'm going to do it in two languages.
I think it's not hard enough.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, 1,000 people, first talk, two languages, no problem. But
yeah, hard mode.
Yeah, at the end of it, I was like, Mom, please help me translate into Japanese.
Nice.
Yeah.
So to wrap up this whole content creation part of this, what advice would you give for anybody out there that's, again, they're like teetering on their fence, like, oh, I've been wanting to start a blog and I just haven't yet, and or they're maybe scared too. Do you have any advice for people getting started in the content creation?
Yeah, I do. This is definitely easier said than done, but I say just do it. I feel like, and honestly, for every video, I probably think a lot more than I actually do, like the work for it. But at the end of the day, like doing the work, you're going to learn a lot more about what to do, what not to do, what you like, what you don't like. And it's going to just like, at the end of it, you're going to have like a product that you can ship or a blog post that you can publish, or maybe you just have a finished product that you don't release anywhere, but you've done the work to actually learn about kind of the creative process and also the skills that you need to do the thing that you're doing. I feel like with content creation and creative stuff like this, it's really easy to get stuck in that of like, oh, it's not good enough, or you know, I need to spend like X much more time on it. But really, it's like nothing's ever going to be perfect. Just do it, publish it, move on to the next thing. Just like do a lot of it and just keep going and don't think too much about it. And I feel like just the act of just creating stuff is going to be a lot more rewarding than just sitting on your ideas and not doing anything. So it's scary, but I say just go for it.
Yeah, no, it's great advice. And to build on that just a little bit, kind of what you just said, just getting out there and doing it, is I like to set the expectations, right? Unless you're Mayuko, nobody's going to watch your first stuff or listen to your first podcast or read your first, like, you just, I'm not saying nobody's going to do it, but you have to have those expectations, right? If you go in there thinking, I'm going to release my first video, it's going to blow up, like, you're probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Again, unless you're Mayuko, but, but just have those expectations of, like, I just need to keep doing and doing and doing and creating and creating and creating. Probably nobody's going to watch for the first 6 months or listen or read, whatever, but you have to keep at it. And I always say, like, don't pay attention to the numbers. Whether it's listenership numbers, view count for like the first year, just put your head down and do. Don't worry about all that, and then kind of reassess, you know, after that year. But you can't get wrapped up in the numbers.
Yeah, because I mean, numbers are ultimately like external motivation, which like yeah, it does help, especially when the numbers are good. But when that's the only thing that's motivating you, and that's not going well, then it really sucks. And so figuring out what those internal motivators are for you, like, do you have fun doing it? Do you like learning about this stuff? Are all things that I feel like help with that. But yeah, like, be realistic about what you think is going to happen, and have no expectations, if anything, of how it's going to do, because then you won't be disappointed.
Very good advice. So one last bonus origin story that we're going to talk about, because Mayuko has recently joined the Twitch train that I have joined as well. So let's talk about what you're doing there, like, talk about what you're playing, kind of what your Twitch stream is about, and then we'll talk about, like, how you got started in that.
Yeah, this is super, super brand new. But yeah, I started a Twitch stream with my husband, Scott. We've done two so far, so that'll give you a sense of how new it is. But it's something that, yeah, I've been talking to you, Sean, for a while now. But we basically play games twice a week, Sunday and Wednesday nights Pacific time. And we just kind of talk to each other and talk to everybody. It's kind of like, I'm not like a gamer at all, honestly. Like, I don't play a lot of competitive games at all. But I always have like had consoles in my house since I was little. Scott, on the other hand, is a gamer, like loves playing all of the games that everybody plays. And like whenever we play games together, I can be kind of like, I don't know. I feel like there's a different part of me that comes out that he thinks is really funny. And he's like, you should stream because you're funny and people would like it. So that's kind of, I guess that's the origin story of it.
So was he on your, I'm kind of piecing this all together. Because I, like she said, we have been talking about it, you know, for a few weeks. Has he been like on you to start streaming for a while? And then when we had our conversation at DubDub, did that kind of like put it over the edge?
It really did, yeah. Because I feel like we started talking about it when GTA 5 came out. Because the way that I play GTA 5 is like, I play the story mode for as long as I can handle until it gets hard. And then I just like find cars to steal.
And that's the game.
Yeah, that's the game, basically. And then you just go and explore the world. And the next thing you know, you're flying a helicopter in the desert. But yeah, like I'm not like I don't really watch that many streams on Twitch. And so like learning in the last few weeks of how Twitch streams work, and we were in one of your streams, which was super fun, Sean. And yeah, I think that's kind of just been helping, and I still obviously have a lot to learn. Like, I'm still learning all the memes and stuff, and been almost taking it like an academic approach to like what PogChamp is and stuff.
Right. It's true. It's a completely different culture. It's a completely different thing from YouTube. You may think it's like similar, but I'm learning. I'm doing it since May 15th, so about 6 weeks now, and I'm still learning. I'm still improving my stream. And what I was surprised about, though, is like how much fun it is.
Yeah,
like, it's addicting. Like, in I average like 10 to 15 viewers a night, but it's a lot of my audience, so it's like we all know each other. There's inside jokes and stuff like that. The chat's flowing even with like 15 people, which in the Twitch world is like not a lot. So I can't even imagine what it's like when I get even like 50 to 100 and the chat is just flowing, and like, it's just, it's so fun.
I'm
just very surprised how much fun I'm having with it.
Yeah, because it's basically just like you're playing games and you're hanging out with friends, which like I feel like playing games online is a really low friction way of hanging out with friends.
Yeah.
I'm still definitely learning about like the banter and how to like talk to people on Twitch and what the conversation is like.
Yeah.
But so far it's been fun. We've been doing Overcooked, 2 mm-hmm. on Switch. And
yeah, I popped real quick. I popped in the other day, or was it Sunday, I think, and I have never seen that game. I've heard of it, but I had never seen that game played, and I was like, what is going on? Like, I was I didn't know, like, it's a cooking game.
It is. It ruins friendships. Like, Scott and I are just always yelling at each other, like, why the heck don't you have the burger done?
Yeah, yeah.
But I played through Overcooked 1 with some friends, and that was super fun, so I was excited when 2 came out. So we've kind of been playing through that, but we're not exclusive to that game, and honestly, we're learning a ton on how to do Twitch, basically. And like, we actually on Sunday we were like, do y'all want to see us play Overcooked or Diablo 3 or this new game that we downloaded? And they're all just like, just play Overcooked, like, just yell at each other.
Yeah, like, because, and I want to stay here for a second, because I think that's the key. In because I'm having, I'll be honest with you, and I told you this at Dub Dub, I thought more of my audience would transfer over, but it didn't. And I think a lot of people don't understand Twitch from what I've been finding in my audience, just like I didn't, just like you don't either. So I'm having to do a lot of like Twitch education on the culture and like how to use Twitch, but also what it is. And you hit on a key point. It's really just hanging out with friends playing games. I think people think it's like, I'm just going to watch Sean play games. But like, yeah, you are doing that. But at the same time, we're all hanging out. Like, my streams, we're drinking too. And like, it's like a little party. Like, we try to have fun with it. So it is like literally just hanging out with friends. That's what I want to try to portray to those out there that haven't, you know, checked out my Twitch stream, twitch.tv/SeanAllen. Or you can check out Mayuko's, which is what?
Twitch.tv/HelloMayuko.
Hello Mayuko. Yeah. So check them both out. Like, it's and come into that with that attitude. It's literally just hanging out with friends. Like, I've had people in the chats like, am I supposed to chat? I don't want to distract you. And I'm like, no, like, that's the point.
Yeah,
like,
please
the
talk.
Chat is the lifeblood of the stream. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, but that's the thing, is like, a lot of people just aren't familiar with the platform. So I've been doing a lot of education. So hopefully this podcast, you know, us talking about it can let you know what it's like. It's a ton of fun. You just come hang out, chat. It's been a blast.
Yeah. Also, if you like, I found last time there were a couple people who were just like, I'm just doing my homework and I have you on in the background, and that I can mm-hmm. totally understand that, because then it's just like you're hanging out with friends but doing your own thing and not feeling the social need to interact with anybody but still feeling like you have company, which like is also totally a valid and fine way of doing that too, if we can provide entertainment or chill vibes while you're doing your homework. But yeah, I've done a ton of like Instagram lives and a couple of YouTube lives. And so I'm trying to figure out like, what is the right, like mood, I guess, to, mm-hmm. To set in the Twitch stream. But yeah, honestly, it's like so casual and it's so fun.
Well, I also feel like it's a good way. So the reason I even got the idea to do Twitch was because I was getting bored of my live streams, because my live streams were just like iOS dev Q&A.
Oh yeah. Same.
And after you do those for a year, like, you just get asked the same questions over and over again. So I got bored with that. And don't get me wrong, I don't blame the audience, because, you know, new people are discovering me every day and not everybody can make every live stream. So, but just for me, it stopped being fun. So I was like, how can I have this live environment but still be fun? So that's why the playing video games on Twitch came about. But what I found is the iOS dev Q&A was more like all business, where like just Q&A, bam, is more professional. Whereas like the Twitch stream, I feel like people get to know like the real me more so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like you said, like a different side of you comes out, where you're just funny and like, you know, for I think you and I have an advantage, because you're streaming with your husband, I'm streaming with my cousin, who like, you know, I've grown up with, we've known each other. So we're just giving each other shit the whole time, like making fun of each other. And like, that just, I don't know, it provides a totally different side that I don't think the audience will normally get to see.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, at the end of the day, we like both edit our YouTube videos to present our best side of ourselves.
For sure, for sure. There's no editing on Twitch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I definitely, in my first Twitch stream, someone was like, wow, Mayuko, like, you are very different from how you present yourself in your videos, which I don't think is maybe like, it's not like night and day, but I feel like the version that you see on Twitch and on live streams is just like a more complete picture of who I am, and it fills in the gaps of like who I am as a normal human being than on other platforms.
No, for sure. Because like you said, YouTube's highly edited. You can't really swear for the algorithm. I mean, you can, but like the algorithm messes you up. And,
you know,
not everybody may be into that. But like I said, it's, I don't know, you're getting the real me on the Twitch stream. So that's what I like about it. And I think if, as content creators, we're trying to build communities and build our audience and build deeper relationships with the audience, I think that's key.
Totally. Yeah. We started playing at the end of our streams. We were doing this thing. I'm making it a thing to play like the Jackbox Party Pack games, if you're familiar with those.
Yeah, I've played that. I played it once.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, it's so fun. It like requires a lot of audience participation, and it's a different like room every time, depending on who's in there. Last time it became this thing where it was like me versus everybody else, and I beat everybody, which was super rare because I never win at anything. But yeah, it's just a fun time, and I've been having a lot of fun doing it, and I'm excited to keep going.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, like, because we're trying to like make it a show, not just us playing video games, but we're constantly thinking like, okay, what fun stuff can we do with the audience to you know make it interactive, like you just said with the trivia game. Totally. So I like where you're going with that. I think that's definitely the thing to do. Just make it an event, make it a show. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just, that's what I keep trying to bang home, is that it's not just watching Sean and Mayuko play video games. Like, it's hanging out, having fun, putting on a show. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and also because we have such small audiences on Twitch, it does feel very intimate. Like, sometimes I pop into, like, the 1,000, 2,000 watched Twitch streams, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here or who these people are. But I feel like both of ours feel very intimate, and we become friends with everybody.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I've thought, like, I don't even want to grow that big.
Yeah,
like,
same.
I don't want to lose that intimacy. Like, when I can't, like, see a screen name and call them out by their first name and remember what they did, and, like, I just think it loses that intimacy, and that's what I enjoy about
it. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, Muko, let's wrap this up. The one final question I always ask, though, is, you know, the show is called Origin Stories. We talked about how you discovered code, how you became an iOS developer. And as you know, the audience out there is kind of on their own journey to, you know, origin story, if you will. So what is your one piece of advice for those that are just starting out, like learning iOS development?
Yeah, I think my piece of advice is to have courage, which sounds a little bit vague, but I feel like every time you're starting out something brand new and you're at the very beginning of your origin story, there's a lot of scary, I don't want to say scary things, but there's just a lot of fear involved because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what you can learn, what you can't learn. You don't know who's out there. And I feel like a lot of that just requires a lot of courage to put yourself out there, to have the courage to make mistakes and fail. And I feel like, especially as I've like gotten past that beginning part, I'm like, oh, courage is probably the most important recipe in all of that. Because that's, if you have the courage to just like go and do things and try it out, then you never know what's going to happen. And a lot of the time it's going to turn out exactly not how you expect it. Actually, it's going to turn out in ways that you don't expect it to, but in the best way possible. There's no way to tell where you're going to end up, and just be okay with that, I guess. So yeah, don't be afraid to try new stuff.
Very well said. I like that. They're the first person that has said that to kind of not try to plan everything out, because you're right. This is a very windy road where I would have never guessed I'd ended up as a full-time content creator right now. Like, that was never in the cards.
Totally, yeah. I mean, if it seems like everybody has their shit together and they've planned every little thing. Because, if you look back on someone's life, it does look very linear, but it's really not. Nobody knows where they're going, and ambiguity is just a natural part of life. And so feeling okay with that ambiguity, I feel like, is such a valuable skill to have. And I think the best way to navigate that is just to have courage and knowing that you're going to be okay and have the courage to try new things and wind around and figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah, what I was going to say was, I know you're big into YouTube. Do you watch Casey Neistat?
I love Casey Neistat.
Yeah. So have you heard him talk about his like Tarzan theory about swinging from vine to vine like throughout life? Have you heard him talk about that?
I actually haven't, but that's a good analogy.
No, yeah, Google that. You'll love it if you're a fan of Casey, because he talks about like that's what life is like. It's like, you know, one rope will swing you all the way in this direction, then you grab the next rope, it swings you in a different direction, and then like that, your life just kind of like zigzags all the way through until you end up like at the end. It's a pretty good analogy. So for those out there that are interested in that, Google Casey Neistat like Tarzan theory or something like that. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I always thought about it like you're climbing up a jungle gym, but I like the Tarzan theory better because there are brief moments where you're holding on to no vines.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, like, oh, who knows where I'll land, but it'll be okay because this won't last forever and this is temporary.
Right, so yeah. Awesome. This was a lot of fun, Mayuko. Let everybody know where they can find you. Give them the Twitter and the YouTube, all that stuff, and the Twitch.
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, and Twitter at Hello Mayuko. Mayuko is spelled M-A-Y-U-K-O. Patreon's the only one that's patreon.com/Mayuko.
Hey, don't you hate that? You can't get that last one. Just got to mess it up.
I know. I actually, like, when I was at Patreon, I was like, I want my Yuko, but I feel like I should have planned that better.
Yeah, it's all right. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a ton of fun. We'll see everybody in the next episode.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. See ya.